Chapter 75. 3 months later, having picked up Storm from Ma Goldberg en passant, they reappeared at Lioncop Homestead. Sean had put on weight, and both of them had that smugly complacent look found only in the faces of couples returning from a successful honeymoon. On the front stoop, and in the outbuildings of Lioncop, were the crates and packing cases which contained wedding gifts, Ruth's furniture and carpets, and the additional furniture and curtains they had purchased in Durban. Ruth, ably assisted by Ada, threw herself joyously into the task of unpacking and moving in. Meanwhile, Sean began a tour of inspection of the estate to determine how much of it had suffered in his absence, and he felt vaguely cheated when he found that Michael had managed very well without him. The plantations were trim and cleared of undergrowth. The vast black scar through their centre was nearly obliterated with freshly planted rows of saplings. The labour force was half as productive again under the new incentive payment scheme which Michael, in consultation with the accountant, had introduced. Sean gave Michael a lecture on not getting too bloody clever and learning to walk before you can run, which he ended with a few words of praise. Thus encouraged, Michael approached Sean one night when he was alone in the study. Sean was in a state of deep contentment induced by a meal from an enormous roast sirloin, which he was digesting, by the fact that Ruth had finally agreed to his adoption of Storm and the change of her name from Friedman to Courtney, and by the prospect of joining Ruth in their gargantuan double bed just as soon as he'd finished his brandy and his hand-rolled Havana cigar. "Come in, Michael, sit down, have a brandy," Sean greeted him genially, and almost defiantly Michael crossed the Persian carpet and laid a thick sheaf of papers on the desk in front of him. "What's this all about?" Sean smiled at him. "Read it and you'll see." Michael retreated to a chair across the room. Still smiling, Sean glanced at the heading on the top sheet. "Preliminary estimates and ground plan for proposed tannin extraction plant, Lioncop Estates." The smile faded. Sean turned the page, and as he read, he began to frown, and then to scowl. When at last he finished, he relit his dead cigar and sat in silence for 5 minutes while he recovered from the shock. "Who put you up to this?"
"Nobody."
"Where would you sell your extract?"
"Page 5. The outlets are all listed there, and the ruling prices over the last 10 years.
"This plant needs 20,000 tons of bark a year. If we planted every foot of Lioncop and Mahubaskloop to wattle, we could only supply half of that. We'd buy the rest from the new estates along the valley. We could offer a better price than Jackson, because we'd save railage to Pietermaritzburg."
"And who'd run the plant?"
"I'm an engineer."
"On paper you are," Sean grunted. "Well, what about water?"
"We'd dam the Babuenstrom above the falls." For an hour, Sean poked and prodded at the scheme, seeking for a soft spot. His agitation mounted as Michael calmly met each of his queries.
"All right," Sean growled. "You've done your homework. Now answer me this one. How the hell do you propose finding £70,000 to finance this little lot?"
Michael closed his eyes, as though he were praying. His jaw was a hard, thrusting line. And suddenly Sean wondered why he had never noticed the strength in that face, the stubborn, almost fanatical determination. Michael opened his eyes again and spoke softly. "A loan on Lioncop and Mahubaskloof for £25,000, a notarial bond on the plant for as much again, and a public share issue on the balance." Sean jumped up from his desk and roared, "No! No, no!"
"Why not?"
still calmly and reasonably.
"Because I've spent half my life in debt up to here."
Sean grabbed his own throat.
"Because now at last I'm in the clear, and I want to stay that way because I know what it feels like to have more money than I need, and I don't like the feeling. Because I'm happy just the way things are now, and I don't want to catch another lion by the tail and have him turn round and claw the hell out of me."
He stopped panting and then shouted,
"Because a certain amount of money belongs to you. But more than that, you belong to it. Because I don't want to be that wealthy again."
Lean and fast as an angry leopard, Michael came out of his chair and smashed a bald fist onto the top of the desk. He glared across at Sean, flushed, angry red under his tan, quivering like an arrow.
"Well, I do. Your only objection to my plan is that it's sound," he blazed.
Sean blinked in surprise and then rallied.
"If you get it, you won't like it," he bellowed,
and Michael matched his volume.
"Well, let me be the judge of that."
At that moment, the door of the study opened, and Ruth stood on the threshold and stared at them. They looked like a pair of game cocks with their hackles up. "What on earth is going on?" she demanded. Both Michael and Sean looked up guiltily. Then slowly they relaxed. Michael sat down and Sean coughed awkwardly.
We were just having a discussion, my dear.
Well, you've woken Storm and just about torn the roof off. Then she smiled and crossed to take Sean's arm. Why don't you leave it until tomorrow? Then you can continue the discussion at 20 paces with pistols. The Pygmies of the Ituri forests hunt elephant with tiny arrows. Once the barb is lodged, they follow quietly and doggedly, camping night after night on the spoor, until at last the poison works its way to the animal's heart and brings it down. Michael had placed his arrowhead deep in Sean's flesh.